So before we get to into our conversation, what I want to do is have each of you just state your name, where you were born, and when, if you don't mind telling me. And so then I'll keep them straight, and that's how I'll keep track of you when you're each talking. So, okay, if you want to start first, Miss Whalen.
Well, I'm Idora Whalen, and I was born November the 12th, 1919. One day and one year after the armistice was signed. My dad was a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what else?
Where?
Is the where?
Yeah.
Shattuck.
Shattuck, where we are today.
Mm-hmm. I'm a native.
All right.
1919, did she say?
Uh-huh. Okay, if you want to state your name and your birthday and where you were born.
Okay, I have all this written down in case you
Great.
Need it. My name is Carol Robertson. I was born Anna Carol Long, December the 25th, 1913. And I was born on the Schaefer homestead, 7 miles south of Gage in Ellis County.
Okay.
My father staked a claim there. And then he built the house, the home, and the buildings out there.
Hmm.
What else do you want to know? Anything more about my childhood, or do you want to wait for that?
We'll let you identify yourself so that
you
talk.
I don't know.
Sure.
Well, I'm Evelyn. We want you to.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I'm Evelyn Caldwell. And
Caldwell with a K or a C?
C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L.
E-L-L. Okay.
And January the 3rd. 1925.
Okay,
and I was born at Gage. I was on a farm south and east of Gage.
Okay. Well, now you all can jump in and talk whenever you want, and I'll make sure we get them down right. So you can have 1, 2, 3 right off, and then S for me. Do you want to tell us about your childhood?
Well, I was kind of a puny kid, but I was born Christmas morning, and the evening before, my daddy and my sister had gone to the country school, Pleasant View Christian Country School,
mm-hmm.
to the program. And then I was born early the morning of December the 25th. And it was in a little three-room house that the pioneers had just built up. You know, they had to improve it to keep their claim. And I remember more about my early childhood than I do some of the things about the early days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the early days were pretty typical, probably, of everything that you've got. My mother was German. Her parents were born in Germany. And there were 8 children in her family. They lost a daughter right after they landed in New York. And my father's people were from England and Ireland. So I'm from that kind of a heritage. I'm half German because my mother was full-blooded German. And
I didn't know that till the other day.
That's right, because you two had got together and talked about the questions mm-hmm. the other day then. What did your dad do?
My father was a school teacher in Indiana. He went to Valparaiso for his mm-hmm. training. And then he had married and had a son, and the son died, and his wife died. And all of our neighbors didn't know anything about that.
Hmm.
But he was pretty heartbroken. And how he and mother got acquainted, and mother was an RN from Chicago, and the doctor had sent her out to care for my daddy's mm. wife. And so later then, he asked mother to marry him. And so on September the 1st, my mother's 30th birthday, they were married, and my Uncle Albert and his wife were married the same day.
Hmm.
Mother and Uncle Albert had stayed in the home to take care of my grandparents until they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So Daddy and Mother and Daddy were a little older than most of the people that got married.
Right,
Mother was on her 30th birthday. She was married, and Daddy was 7 years older than she. So Athalma was born August the 17th the next year, 1909, and then I was born 4.5 years later, a little longer than that, nearly 5. So my parents were getting kind of old. My baby sister was born on May the 17th, and she, by the time she was 6 years old, she was an invalid. So that takes a lot, tells a lot about my childhood. We were on the farm, and Daddy had gone to show that he was like some of the rest of them out there. It wasn't what it cooked up to be, so he went out to California, he and Mother, and he didn't like it. He said, it's another Chicago. So they came back, and Daddy went on to carpentering work, and he worked it through the lumber yard. Now, I will be hesitant, and I'll get my words mixed up, so
you're doing just fine.
Anyway, Daddy worked. He took the embalmer's course when he was in Chicago. So he worked for Lovell and Lane, I believe was the name of the furniture store and the mortuary at Gage. And he embalmed for them, but he didn't like that. If Mother hadn't been a nurse and gone with him, he'd have stopped that. He was a very sensitive person, and a grief with people, you know, at that time was too much for him. I don't know, from there, I went to a grade school at Pleasant View, and in 1923, we moved to Shattuck because Daddy was going to go into high school, and he was going to do other work. When they were in Chicago, my daddy was a super at the construction of the Argo plant, and so he built some houses out north of Gage in the early day, in the early late 1918, I guess. And I got to go to country school, and I was very studious.
Yeah? What was going to a country school like?
Well, I thought it was heaven because I enjoyed learning things, you know, and my daddy encouraged me in that. And it really was. The whole neighborhood was just like family, you know. And so that was great, and I know that I was very studious. Even as a little kid, I wanted to learn, and and my daddy tolerated me. But I was kind of ill, and I remember him walking the floor with me because I had trouble breathing, and he whistled to me, and I can still hear my daddy whistle. But our teachers were very important. At one time, the teacher stayed with us. It was just like any early neighborhood, I assume. My highlight thing was the summer, as soon as the harvesting were done, the whole community gathered at our little locust grove for a picnic. And that was wonderful. I mean, there was just everybody came, and all the kids, and I remember getting ready for it, because through the winter the grove didn't get any attention. My daddy was building, and he was doing this, that, and the other. And when spring came and the harvest was done, we started cleaning up the grove, and that meant trimming everything up and raking everything up and building swings and tables, you know, for the party. And of course the family all got sugars all over. By the time the picnic was there, we were really scratching.
What did you do for sugar bites then? Because now they, like, make medicine. You can get it
different
at Walmart
kind of,
and stuff.
Yes,
what do you put on it then?
My mother, being a nurse, knew all of the stuff, and I think her mother was very much on herbs and things that way. We took soda water baths, salts, and
tubs of alcohol to kind of refreshing, you know, make
there
it
There was
cool.
other spice things that they used, you know, as a lotion. But I don't remember. I do remember something that was in that Mother had a medicine cabinet in the bathroom, and there were bottles in there, and I didn't know what they were, but I found out what it was later. Mother would get it at the pharmacy in Gage, and it was a glass bottle about this wide and this deep and this tall. It had a cork in it, and the front of it said spirits. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant. But I knew that in the wintertime, if we got colds or got pneumonia, we had a hot toddy with spirits in it. And so that was
one of... She's a teetotaler now, I think, don't.
Well, yes, very, very much so. But anyway, that was one of the things. And I just realized in the later years, as I think back, my mother's mother must have been terrific on herbs and things that way, because mother knew what to give for everything, it seemed like. And of course, grandmother had lived for a number of years in pretty critical condition, and mother had taken care of her. So what she had in the medicine cabinet was things that had been handed down to her, and then the things she had learned when she'd been in training. Mm-hmm. So she, when they married, well, Daddy told her that she could take care of the neighborhood all she wanted to, and they'd manage to take care of the kids, but she was not to charge anything for her services. So she never did, but when there was any need in the neighborhood, she went. And sometimes she would be for, like, her aunt's daughter was born, and she nearly died when that happened. So mother was there with them about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And her neighbor ladies, one of the girls from the neighborhood, stayed with we kids while mother was busy nursing. Hmm. And I think she delivered about every child that was delivered out in that neighborhood.
Goodness.
You know, out 7 or 10 miles from town was pretty hard to get a doctor out there, and they came horseback or in a buggy or something. Huh. Now, that was because I was born in 13 instead of 23. So, but school was wonderful. We had kids of all ages, and the teachers were pretty good. At least I got to go right along with the 8th graders. And we had a spelling bee every Friday, and I got to where I could spell down the 8th grader, so
yay.
I was a pretty smart kid when I came to.
Was spelling your favorite subject?
Well, I liked it because that was a fun thing. We had spelling bees,
spelling
and if
bees,
you could stand up there a long time and not be spelled down, well, that was something I was pretty... And I remember our Christmas programs, and we'd have different plays and all like that.
Tell me about the Christmas programs at school.
Well, they were... I don't know how to tell you. We sang songs, and we had little plays and little things, you know, and read some scripture, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And of course, the story of Jesus was always wonderful. Mm-hmm. And we had Christmas trees and exchanged presents, drew names and things like that, you know.
So would each student then bring a present to trade? Or did
no,
the school
we didn't do that.
Do
we
that.
Just drew names, mm-hmm. and we just brought one present for whose neighbor name we got. And we had... pie suppers, you know, where we baked a pie and sold it to raise funds for anything.
What they call it, literary?
Yeah, no, the literary is when we had somebody
plays.
In.
I never went to one.
Well, we did that, and even after we came to Shattuck and...
Pie suppers, I guess they call
pie suppers, well, we had that. But all of those things were... The whole community participated in it, you know. And you found out who was the good cooks and who was the bad cooks. And I know that my mother could make the best butterscotch pie of anybody in the country.
Butterscotch pie? I never had that before.
You haven't?
That sounds kind of good.
That was my brother's favorite.
Huh.
He was good. When he was little, he used to come in, he'd be real hungry, and he'd say to my mother, "Oh, Mommy, make me scally pie."
Well, is it like a pudding type
yes,
pie?
Yeah, it's a soft
pie. That sounds good.
You can even get it in a
pudding mixer. You can
that's
get it that
more
way now, but the time that mother got, she
had to burn
the sugar. And it was...
That's hard to do, too.
Well, she was pretty good. And my mother made cheese out of the cottage cheese, put it in butter and melted the cheese in the iron skillet. And that was real good. We liked that. She baked bread regularly, and in the spring of the year, we could hardly wait till the onions and radishes got big enough to pull, and so we didn't let them stay in the yard very long. We lived on the creek, a ways up from the creek on the hill, and we would fix little picnic boxes then with our fresh garden stuff as soon as that. About the time we kicked off our shoes in the spring and went barefooted, it was time to start having a picnic, and that was the size of our picnics. And it was usually just the three of we children, or maybe we had neighbors that lived a little less than a mile from us. And so we kids all got together. It was fun. We dug sand out of the creek that was wet and built castles.
That sounds fun.
That was fun. And sometimes they would last for quite a while, you know. But if it was the right kind of a season, then the water would come up, you know. And we could dig ditches around our castles and really have fun doing things like that. Of course, harvest was always a big time. And the neighbors shared their farming with neighbors next to them or something. Mm-hmm. I know that the Hendersons had a header, and my daddy was a good stacker and had his own equipment, you know, for the harvest. So the harvest would maybe be part of it on our place and then part of it on our place. We changed back and forth as it needed cutting and stacked, and then later in the summer or fall was thrashing time. And Mr. Wright, Billy Wright, had the thrashing equipment. And then after him was a Mr. Barnes that thrashed. But we kids had the privilege at noon, when the harvesters, the thrashers, were in to eat, we could go in the header barge. Mm-hmm. Is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
Header barge.
Header barge,
and tromp the wheat that was in there,
yeah,
so that the grain would come out, and then we would take that out, and Mother would help us wind it. And that's where we got our money. Then Daddy would haul it in and sell it for us. And if we had any money for the 4th of July, well, that's where we got our money from.
And what did you do on 4th of July with that money if you had it?
Well, there was usually something go on. I remember one time we went down to Davison's for a big celebration. They had it was the new time for airplanes, and there was a couple of men flew in, and Mr. Davison was representative, I think, at that mm-hmm. time. And so it was a political fest, I'm sure, probably my first exposure to politics. But that was something, and way down there, it took all day to get there because of the sand hills. Now, the sand hills is another subject.
Yeah.
That when I married a young man from Arnett, and he had a mail route. What did you call those?
Star route
down to Peak. That was down in the Sandhill country. And it was, we had a Model T Ford. And when we'd have these big windstorms, they would blow out holes. Some of that land was pretty hard, and then there would be a bunch of sand, and it'd blow up and make sand dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And but it would leave a place, a hard place in the road, which was pretty rough usually. But that would be blowholes, I believe they call them. And then when it would rain, well, they would hold the water. So that was kind of an experience that was nice. And it was, we enjoyed it much because we were both pretty much outdoor people. Mm-hmm. And I was his substitute.
Mm-hmm. So,
but you know, you weren't afraid of anything.
Yeah.
It was the whole neighborhood knew that he was going to get the mail today, maybe.
And
I remember Romy bought a windmill. Somebody was moving from one of their places down there. Of course, there was ranch country and all that. And that's what we had in town then. He built this tower for an old windmill, and we had water on our place in town instead of city water, you know. We had our own. And it was very fascinating. I met an awful lot of people on the mail route that I would never have met otherwise. And they're still very dear people. It was a pretty rugged neighborhood down there. I mean, that's where the bootleggers and the
Oh, really?
The sand hills, yes.
Well, now, that's a new story. Nobody's told us anything
about
that.
Nobody's told you anything about that. Well, I could run a bunch of names down through there. And those people were wonderful people, though. I mean, they had a terrible reputation, and they're still known for that. And who were the boys that Dr. Newman knew and waited for them when they got shot? You remember hearing about that? They were friends of the Dixon family down there, and of that bunch, and the Wagnons. Mm-hmm. And they hold up down there, those
Cadwell. Oh, you mean Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, Bonnie and Clyde were at that bunch.
And their name really is Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, it was.
That's
but they were more from, they were more from down south farther. But, oh, why can't I remember the name of that gang?
Wasn't Cadwell?
No, the Cadwells were in on that. I mean, they had their own stills, I guess you would say. They were the Cadwells and Jack. Well, he was on Mommy's mail route. They were all on Mommy's mail route, so I got acquainted with them. But they were always very good people. I mean, if you had any problem, you just was going to be taken care of. You knew you were. But I can see the places, yeah, the Dixon boys, where they lived. One of them was involved with that.
Oh, yeah.
And the Wagnons. And, well, there was a bunch of them. But that was kind of the out of the neck of the country. I mean, it was just a good place for them to hide out down there along the Canadian River. And so that was some of the early stuff. I was already married, and I wasn't married until 34.
You got married in 1934.
Mm-hmm. I was born on Christmas Day. I was married on Easter Sunday. And
you like the holidays, don't you?
Well, it happened to be April Fool's Day, too.
Oh, no. Was that on purpose?
You're afraid I'll go to sleep.
April the 1st.
Yeah.
I can't go to sleep on this.
And let's see. Well, now, that was in the Dirty 30s. Now, the thing in the Dirty 30 that I should talk about was, of course, we didn't have any, ever had an outdoor toilet.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for my bathroom. And
we're thankful for our inside command.
Thank you.
Water in the house, you know. We were fortunate, my daddy being construction person. We had water in the house, but it was a pitcher pump.
Yeah.
And a sink. And then, but we had a cistern down under the porch. Our house was a small five-room bungalow with a porch on three sides, concrete porch. And underneath that concrete porch was where the cistern was. So we always had good cold water in the summertime and didn't freeze up or anything.
Yeah.
But I was going to tell you something else. What was it? After I was married in 34, went into the Christian church. I'd been a Methodist before that. And so, but I got involved. We didn't have children. We had always wanted children. So I got involved very much in the children's work and in church work.
Was that the church of your husband? Why did you change churches?
Because I read my Bible.
Okay. Okay.
And I could do just about as much work as I could find time for. And then I started. One of the questions asked, Wendy, what was your first salary?
Uh-huh.
Well, I hadn't had a salary before because we weren't allowed to charge the neighbors for anything, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I got to working at anything I could. I worked some at the bank, I worked for the OE Nulls, and anything that I could find where they hired anybody because we didn't have a lot to go on. My husband had decided to be an electronics technician, so he was doing that correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sold wind chargers.
Yeah.
And any of the people down there that had any electricity at that time, it was the wind that provided it. So down in the South Country, he sold wind chargers. And let's see. I got involved in politics. And you don't want to put in that what I would tell you. Because my daddy changed politics whenever somebody ran for office that needed his vote in the primaries. Well, then he'd change his politics so we could vote for him in the primaries. You know?
Okay.
And so early I learned that, I enjoyed American literature and politics, you know, and history and all of that stuff in school. So I kind of got exposed to that. And then when I worked for the Nulls, Well, I really got exposed for it, and then I worked in a print shop, and Roy Beardsley was there, so they got pushing me into politics. And, of course, I enjoyed it, and I was always meeting interesting people. But I even ran for office because nobody would run against a woman, and those guys pushed me into signing them to run for the
court. When was this?
Well, that was along the latter part of the 30s.
Yeah?
And but always I was somewhat involved in politics. But when I was 20, when I got married, I went to the first party meeting that I'd ever gone to. And I went to the Democrat meeting because that's the way I had signed up to be a Democrat that year. And my dad was a Democrat that year.
And so we did this year.
Yeah. So anyway, it wasn't any particular thing that did it, but it was just the way it was. So I went to the meeting. But the man that was a newspaper man was there, and he was the big shot in Democrat politics. And I made up my mind I was in the wrong fence, so yeah. I went the next day and changed my politics. And then during the war, when I was overseas, no, I was not overseas, but we were running around with him where he had to go, and I had to go everywhere. But I made my mind up if I was what I was going to do when I got back, and one of them was going to be to work in American politics and get a two-party system in Oklahoma. Because we didn't have a ghost of a chance as Republicans, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I did, and that's where I started working for Henry Bellman and then for Dewey Bartlett.
Yeah?
And it was great.
You worked for Henry Bellman?
Yeah.
We, on our presentation we did, we brought his telephone from his office. It's part of our special collections. Mm-hmm. We had the telephone from his office, so we had it in the car, actually.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. You worked for him.
And, yeah, I was very much involved in politics. But all that time, too, I was involved with kids. And I took kids on political trips with me.
Yeah?
And I'll tell you, I must have had the most wonderful husband in the world, because if anything came up that had to do with politics or church, well, I could go, you know, and take care of the kids and do this, that, and the other. So it was pretty nice. And we liked the same things. And we liked the outdoors. He loved to hunt. And I remember he got me a .22 rifle. And when we were carrying mail, like, we would shoot quail along the way down and on the way back. So it was a nice life. There was something that I thought would be interesting, and I've forgotten now what it was. Can you remind me of what it might have been?
Well, I was going to ask you something else. Maybe you'll think of it after I say this. The group that we talked to just before Kim and I came over here said that there was a real problem with coyotes this area. That you had coyote, what do they call them?
Drives.
Yeah. Rabbit drives and coyote drives. Do you guys remember those?
Yes. This morning, as I went out after the paper early, I could hear those coyotes south.
You remember the drives?
Yeah.
I remember. I'm older than you are.
You don't remember the coyote drives?
No, I really don't.
You were in town.
Mm-hmm. That asked the question about, you know, a woman's doings about, and we had garden for the whole neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
My uncle was somewhat handicapped, and he lived with us, but he was one of those German gardeners that knew how to fix everything, whether it was cured meat of every kind, head cheese, and everything they did, you know, and that was for the whole winter, canned stuff. And in harvest time, we dug potatoes. And the worst job was picking the peas and canning peas. That was the hardest one. And they asked how was food stored. Well, that's typical. We had a cellar, a basement under the house, and it had big concrete shelves down there. And that's where we had our canned stuff and our sausage and meat and stuff that way. And the separator was down there, and I milked cows. And
the cream separator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carried the buckets of milk down there to separate it, and then take the cream back up and put it out in the... We had a storage tank that Daddy built out of wood, a long one that was our refrigerator in the summer. It was the cold water right from the well, then through that, and then on out to the tanks.
Uh-huh.
so we had a storage place for fresh stuff. And there was something that I thought I was going to tell about that was interesting to me, but I can't think what it was. I need to tell something about the duster. The thing that was most frightening to me was shortly after we were married, Black Sunday. You may have heard about the Black Sunday. We were we've always been pretty much to go to church regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday afternoon, we decided we'd go down to High Walks. We had a little pond back on the spring, and we'd fish up there. There was a lot of persimmon trees and a lot of other pretty things, so we went out there. We left right after lunch, or took a lunch with us, I don't remember. But it was probably 12 miles down there, I don't know really, from Arnett to the river, you know, I don't remember. It must have been something like that.
Yeah.
And we had gone, parked our car and gone up to the pond. And Romy went to get a drink. And when he came back, he said, "We got to go." This is a big cloud coming in from the north. Well, by the time we got our fishing tackle back up to the car, that had hit. He stood right. I was sitting in the driver's seat, and he stood right beside me in the car, and I couldn't see him. Now, that was the most drastic thing that I think I'd ever endured.
And we were
there. Oh, yes, oh, yes, I think. Yes, it scared us. And you know, if you knew anything about the scripture, you know what it says, that the moon will turn dark and this, that, and the other. So we just had the feeling like we have today that this is the end of time, you know. And it was very drastic, and we had to sit there. Of course, we knew the way in and out, but it was pretty rugged getting up to where that was. And I guess there wasn't anybody home because we didn't even stop at the house. We just tried to get out of there and get on the road home. But all the way home, it was just creeping along, you know, because after that lifted, well, you could at least begin to see where you had been and where you were going. But it was very frightening to the whole community. But the dust storms were perpetual, and you can depend on it. Every morning I'd dig out. And I mean dig out. Our little house was not a very sturdy house, but at least we had a home.
Right.
we had windows and we had doors, and it was all housed in. But the dirt came right through it. I mean it did, every day and night. In the morning, forenoon, it would clear out and you'd clean it out. But by the time evening came, you were soaking your sheets in water to hang up in front of the windows and doors. It would come right through the sides of the house. And you know, people said, well, yeah, but if you had a brick house, it wouldn't. But it did. The Humphreys had built a new brick home.
Filtered in.
Yeah.
And their attics would get full of it. And if there was any seam around your door or anything, well, it would pile inside. And that, of course, was what was making those places down in the Sand Hill Country, the blowouts, apparently they called, because it would blow out till you'd hit hard dirt.
Excuse me.
But also then, everything that they raised out west came in. All of the thistles and the weeds and everything like that came in and planted it in their yards. Now, we had a windmill, and we just let it run, and it watered our garden. But we got the darndest batch of stuff growing in it. Things it didn't belong to our part of the country, you know.
Can only imagine.
But we enjoyed that sort of thing. We enjoyed our mail route down south because we saw prairie chicken that I'd never seen before, and other things like that. So that was very interesting. But about school, when it came to Shattuck, I was really astounded.
In what way?
Well, the school system. Of course, I wasn't used to a one-grade school, and I came in here for the fourth grade, and we just had fourth grade. Mm-hmm. We had one teacher, but the subjects were so easy. I'd been through them all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids were so jealous. I was making the honor roll, and they called me teacher's pet. And I was no more than teacher's pet. And of course, I was a sensitive kid. I was nervous, and oh, I could have cried because it was that way. And so I'd learned that, well, you just don't don't answer all the questions or do this, that, or something else. Mm-hmm. But I was interested in school, and I thought I would be going on. I loved every bit of it. It was just wonderful, and I had lovely teachers, and I loved them. But a bit of jealousy, and we had German people. Maybe that hurt worse.
Yeah.
Out in our neighborhood, they didn't even know we were German, that Mother was German.
Mm-hmm.
Came into Shattuck and moved in beside the Weiberts over there, and Mrs. Weibert didn't speak English. She was German. She came to see Mother one afternoon, and I knew that it wasn't a very happy occasion for Mother. She was having a struggle. And that evening, she told Daddy, she said, "That's the hardest day's work I ever did." See, Mrs. Weibert was a German that had been shipped to Russia, you know, there that much, and then she was a Russian German. So it was like her language was so different.
Hmm.
See, Mother was High German from Germany, and I guess that's the old-fashioned German.
Yeah.
But anyway, so but Mother got to where there were several people here that spoke straight German, and we had neighbors that we lived, when we lived out there on the highway, that Mother could communicate with. And Marcella, when she was shut in, of course, she just loved these dear old German ladies, and my Uncle August would teach her some German, but I didn't get exposed to that.
Yeah.
I would love to have, and I'd love to be able to speak German. But now we have lost that, you know, in our community.
Do you speak German?
Do I speak German?
Do you speak any German?
No,
I'm not either. But we've been around it for. I don't speak any of it.
Well, these kids don't either, you know, any German families anymore. Well, the World War did that, didn't it? You weren't allowed to.
That's right.
So that changed things. Nobody knew my mother was German, and these kids made these nasty remarks about the flatheads and all that. They didn't know what they were talking about. Some of the finest people came in from South to go to school here. But it was different. I mean, that business of ever being the same family was different. It was, you know, and then there was the jealousy of the bankers, and there was jealousy of the Ingalls because they were in the grain business, you know. And if they had anything, or if they, well, there was jealousies. And that just was never a part of my life.
I think these schools were so cliquish even.
Well, yes, that's what I'm
even
saying.
Even then?
Oh, yes, back then that was worse than they are now, I think.
Of course, coming from a one-room school where we all were in the same room,
right.
And then you come into town where the classes were, you know, for the grades were different, that was quite an adjustment, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was.
Well, you know, I had parents that there was no prejudice one way or the other, you know. So we didn't notice it, and they didn't let us notice it.
I didn't know anything about it until I was probably...
And you didn't know anything about if somebody had a crooked nose like I have. You didn't know. You weren't allowed to mention it, you know. I remember when we had to go back to Indiana for a funeral, and there was a colored lady that sat across the aisle in the train, had a couple of children, and I tapped my hand on Mother and said, "Mother, there's a nigger. Boy, I found out when I got home.
That you didn't speak that word, did you?
I didn't use that word. There was no difference. And so, but that, we didn't have too much of that. And when you have something to overcome that in the family, well, you don't dwell on that. But those were things that were different. So it was like going from Shattuck to OSU. And I don't know whether there's that feeling in the college. I wasn't privileged to go, so.
Changes each year, depending on who's going to school there now, I think. So.
That and who the leadership is, I suppose.
Right. One of the things you didn't mention, but you said you lived by the highway for a while. Did you ever have any tramps or hobo-type people come by?
The folks lived here after, I guess it was about the time I was married. I was in school anyway. And they could count on feeding. That was Depression time, and there were a lot of people moving, looking for jobs. And I think they must have given the name of where they got something to eat. And most of them would ask, now, is there something I can do for you? But Mother always had food, and she fixed breakfast for them. And Daddy had his chairs in the backyard, and he enjoyed visiting with the man.
Really?
Really, oh, yeah.
A lot of people we've talked to said, oh, you want to feed him and get him out of there as fast as possible.
Well, now,
but for him to talk to him, that's different.
Yeah.
Well, Mrs. Whalen, did you want to tell me about how it was different for you?
Well, I can't compete with them. They're all here.
She does have quite a good story, so.
I was born a twin. I had a twin brother. And we were supposed to be in the first set of twins born in Shattuck. And so we were kind of petted that my twin brother died when we were, just before we were three, with some kind of a stomach problem. I think they called it summer complaint at that time, they tell me. Did you ever hear that?
I've heard of summer complaint.
And I don't know whether it was appendicitis or what. And we lived at the edge of town here, east of, in town, but we had an acreage. And we moved my parents moved their house from in this neighborhood out to about six blocks east. And
that must have been quite a process. It's a process now, moving a house.
Well, it is.
So I can only imagine.
There were a lot of it done.
You want a little
I think one of the questions was,
did you
how come
you?
our parents moved here?
Why did you come here, yeah?
Well, my grandparents came from Indiana, and they moved to Iowa, where my mother was born. And then my grandfather was quite a historian and as fond of the West, and he was a young lawyer, which was most of the time it was a starving lawyer.
Yeah.
In those days.
I think he went to the same school my dad did.
Yes. They were at Valparaiso or Appraisal.
They
went to school up in northern Indiana College. And, let's see. I've had trouble in working with this, separating the Depression from the Dust Bowl days.
And you know what? You don't even have to do that if you don't want to. Just talk about it all in
well,
one
Well, I
fiction.
Mean, in my yeah. mind, it's all yeah. kind of
well,
like
kind of run in together.
Right.
And
right.
Then we ran
we
into
in
the war.
We
right. All kind of is.
So, I've always been real interested in genealogy, and I've studied a lot of that. It's one of my hobbies. Just the other day I found I had a cousin, right, was born in Shattuck. I didn't know. a second cousin. Let's see. My parents, after they moved our house out to the edge of town, well, my mother had, everybody always had chickens, no matter whether you were in town or not, you know, we had our chickens and the eggs, and she had always had chickens, and my brother, who I have a brother, living brother, Bob
okay.
McIntosh,
okay.
And he got pneumonia and almost died, and they said for Mama to have him outside a lot. So she raised more chickens and more chickens.
Give you something to do,
right? When they moved out there, they got a pretty good-sized incubator, and it was in the basement. And I always think, my goodness, how that could have caught on fire. Wouldn't that have been terrible? But it didn't. And they kept them. Mostly my mother did that, and my daddy, he started out as had a garage when he got home from the service, and he lost a lot of money. People couldn't pay their bills, and so he went broke.
Hmm.
So he didn't have any kind of job for a while there, but different work, and, you know, just In fact, I remember his telling that he dug holes for the telephone line going across the hills up here for a dollar a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that was good wages, even later than that.
Yeah.
And, let's see. I had my grandparents, my great-grandparents, Lucas, who moved from Kansas down to Bridgeport, Oklahoma, which is down on the I-40 now, except you can't find it. Harley and I looked a long time for it one time. And he had a store down there, but he wanted to move up and prove up on land. Now, have they told you about that?
I've heard some people talk, but I haven't heard your version, so you can tell me if you want to.
Well, they had my grandmother was a nurse, and she married my grandfather, McIntosh, because she worked in the Santa Fe hospital up in Kansas, and he was ill, and so she had nursed him there, and so they met and married. Well, the great-grandparents and the grandparents came to down on the river down where she was talking about, down in the sand hills where the bootleggers were. They weren't bootleggers.
Yeah, come on, tell the truth.
But anyway. What?
Let's put some color in there.
Anyway, my grandmother was Dr. Newman's nurse down in that area. She was a licensed nurse, I guess it would be, we'd call them now. And she, Dr. O.C. was a doctor at Grand, which is a little, no longer there, but it was a county seat at one time. And she lived about 5 miles. They had proved out up on land, about 5 miles east. And when they proved up on land, they had to live there for so long. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was a mechanic on the Santa Fe Railroad, and so he would be gone a long time. And she lived on that sawed house, or if that's what it was. I think it was wood. By herself, and anyway, but Dr. O.C. Newman would send her a message somehow, I guess by horse, and she would go deliver babies and things. And she was a very good nurse. And so the great-grandparents decided to move to Shattuck. And he was a carpenter, and there are several of his houses still being used in Shattuck. And so she came too, and that little old, I don't know, I can't imagine how anybody lived down there in the sand hills, a woman by herself. But my daddy was with her. And he wanted to get away too. He went to a little country school, and he wasn't a very very good student, I don't think, because my mother said one of his teachers and told her how ornery he was. Took a donkey to school or something. And so they moved up here too, and she was Dr. O.C.'s nurse up here. And
I remember where she lived.
Uh-huh. Oh. I keep thinking that's thunder.
It's her heater.
Oh.
Everything you get anymore is noisy.
Yeah. If it's quiet, it doesn't work for very long, I think.
But I went to school in Shattuck, and I was in what we called, wasn't kindergarten, primary.
Yeah, primary.
Primary. And I started when I was 5, before I was 6, And I wasn't a very good student, I don't think, because I couldn't tell 6 from 7 or so.
Oh, no.
And I had my numerals all they were people in a family, and in my mind.
Yeah.
And I finally learned them, and my parents kept, this is when we still lived up here in town, and they kept, let girls come in from the country to live in town. They didn't have buses at that time or anything, and they lived with them. And I remember when I was in the primary, well, we had a girl living with us, which was just like a sister, and she was a senior. And I remember one day I was kept after school, after the noon hour. And there was a path from here up to the schoolhouse. Do you remember? And anyway, I remember Juanita was her name, and she would... I had to run real fast to beat her home. I didn't want anybody to know I had to stay in. And I remembered all the names of all my teachers when I was in grade school. I tried to be quite studious. I wasn't valedictorian, I'll tell you that. But I did, and my ambition was to go to college. And I participated in band, and
what did you play?
I played a baritone.
Really?
And I wasn't very good. I wasn't too good at anything I did, I don't say. I love it. But anyway,
I would have thought you would have played clarinet or flute or something like that.
I wanted to. I wanted to play a clarinet, but my mother wouldn't let me for some reason. Huh. She thought there was too much to buy reeds and
well, that, she's
to
probably
buy
right.
reeds and things like that. I have to look at my notes, Carol.
Well, I didn't make enough notes. Mostly it helped me to remember.
Our house was a very modest house, and when I don't expect any of the other ladies have told you, but when I don't remember, probably it was when I was about 15, the veterans were offered a bonus, and so we built on another room. And that was my room that I helped Tote plaster and mix the plaster for my dad. I lost a few pounds that summer.
And so you helped build this room that became your room.
Yes.
So that was probably kind of fun, actually. Work, but still fun. Yeah.
My parents did start this hatchery, and they had my daddy was city water superintendent for 30 years, I think, but we all worked in the hatchery. I think the question was how many were in our family. I had my brother Bob, which was 4 years younger, and our activities were our band and study and 4-H and church activities and movies.
Yeah.
Saturday night movies. And did anyone tell you, you know, at one time, maybe you're too young to know. But anyway, they'd have continued stories at the movies for Saturday night.
Yeah.
And they'd leave it going thump 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 westerns, and
yeah.
You had to go back the next Saturday night to
see what happened. How much did it cost to go to the movies?
Oh, I don't know.
A dime? That's pretty good.
If I had a dime, I could go to the show, but I didn't have a dime.
That's a pretty good deal.
Well, yes. When Harley and I were dating, we went to the movies, he would have a dollar for the evening. So it wasn't too expensive then. When I went to Oklahoma A&M or Oklahoma State, room and board was $20 a month.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, I had a room that was quite... it was the end of the hall in Murray Hall. You know where
that
is.
Yeah, I do.
It was the cheapest room we could get.
When were you at OSU?
37.
So I know when it was $20 a month. Because it's not now.
No, I know. It got more expensive when I was there.
Yeah, it did.
Let's see. As far as people living with it, I started to say that. We had some boys who would come, and rural boys, and they'd come and help work for us. And we had a little room in the basement where they would stay.
But you were talking about the farmhands, or the boys that lived with you. That's where we stopped.
They were the farmhands. Uh-huh. My grandparents, as I said, my grandfather was a lawyer, and didn't make very much money. My grandmother kept students that came to school, and she had upstairs, and they did their own cooking and everything, and they kept these boys. She liked to keep the boys better than the girls, because the girls were too fussy. Didn't have to worry about the boys being so needing so much water and everything, because she had to carry the water up and down the stairs. And as far as the I expect the ladies that talked to you a while ago told about raising chickens a lot.
Yeah.
That was a mainstay, and we had, everybody was raising chickens and helped to sold eggs in town, and it helped to support all of us.
Yeah? They talk about raising ducks, too. One family raised ducks.
Yes, yeah, so the Germans raised geese. Mostly.
That's where we got our pillows from.
In fact, there's an old German man, I think he's still alive, and he used to get our phone number mixed up down on the farm with Harley's brothers, and he raised geese. And this old gentleman would call up about every Thanksgiving or Christmas, and he'd say, "Have you got damn geese?"
Oh, no.
And I'd have to tell him I wasn't the one that had damn geese.
And he wasn't saying damn, brother.
But that's the way he meant. Instead of damn, he'd damn. He'd run it in together. I graduated from college in 41, and in those days, it was kind of hard to get a job. Right at that time.
What had you studied?
I was a home economics major. I don't tell that. People look at my house. But anyway, I did have but I couldn't find a home economics job. That's what I should say. So school was ready to start, and the Whites from up north, their
Charlie.
Son, and it was Pleasant View School too, but it was in a different locale. There were only 6 students, but they didn't want them to come to Shattuck to for school. So they came in and asked me if I would come out and teach their school. I had never been in a country school.
She was in for a surprise.
It was worse than coming to town school. And Mrs. White tutored me on it, what to do, but I still was pretty dumb teacher. But anyway, I stayed with a family, and my mother would come out and get me every Friday evening, and then I'd bring me back Monday, and so I wasn't there all the time. And Carol mentioned head cheese.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
No, I don't. And I was going to ask you, and I forgot.
And anyway.
What is that?
They make kind of a lunch meat out of it.
Well, of course, we put it in crocks and sealed it in the top with, that's another thing. We made our own lard and that within the, what do you say, about how do you cook the lard?
Render the thatch
and over the pigs. And then you season your sausage, or it's more that your head cheese is more like sausage.
Or then they take the meat.
And the meat. Okay.
That's where they got the name.
Yeah, it's the trimmings. Okay. You don't throw anything away. You don't make something. Okay.
When I
Saus. That's a German name for some of that kind of stuff.
Oh.
I don't know.
Where I stayed, my lunch every day. That I was out in the country for 4 days, was a sandwich, head cheese, and I just don't like that word.
I can imagine.
It was Saus, was that one of the other words?
That's a German name for it.
Anyway, I learned a lot.
That was quite an experience, I imagine.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so the next year I taught at Fargo, and 3 years I taught at Fargo, and then I was getting married, and so I...
So when did you get married?
In 1945. And at that time, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but Harley and I met. He was from Arnett, and I was from Shattuck. Competing towns. But anyway, we met first at 4-H Club Camp at Stillwater. We both were there. And then we met at a football game again, and that was our first date. And we were married in 45, and Harley had volunteered for the service, but he had had polio, and he didn't pass. So, and we were married by my grandfather. And he was county judge at that time. And anyway, Ronnie, our son, was on the road pretty quick. So pregnant women didn't teach school at that time. So I had to resign at midterm at first semester. And he was born in June of 46. And then we had another son. And he was born in 55, and he was hurt in an accident.
Oh. We don't have to talk about that if you don't want to.
I remember.
Don't have to talk about
it. And as far as the Dust Bowl, I remember it blew every day. No. Are you old enough to remember that?
I was old enough to remember that. And then the sheets at the window, and when you'd get up the next morning, that if your mother had a quilt on the bed, you know, with how they quilted with different prints, that was just a seal, though, that you couldn't see the pattern where it settled in through the night.
I remember one time I took a nap in the afternoon, and then I got up, there as my silhouette.
Oh, my gosh.
And
when I try to imagine what that must have been like, I'm sure after a while you're just like, man, there's my dust again. But I just, I can't even.
You see, we had had such long dry spells before that they started blowing.
Yeah.
And we were brought into it slowly and worse and worse because it became drier all the time.
Yeah.
More crops to
the black duster, I don't know whether any of them have told you they tried to outrun it.
No, that's a new story.
That was when I was in high school. I was a sophomore in 35. And Bonnie Brown, Bass Brown, was our next door, our neighbor, three blocks away, and we were always the best of friends. And I'd had the measles, and my mother would not let me outside, you know, but Bonnie had come up to play with me, or visit. And we had been playing Greek mythology or something.
Yeah.
But Mama said, well, we rode, walked each other back and forth, mm-hmm. these three blocks, and she said, well, I could go out and walk halfway with Bonnie. Well, we got out to the street and started down the road, and here was this rolling dirt coming in, and that came in from Colorado, didn't it? Mm-hmm. The dark. And it was, let's see. Oh, well, Bonnie started running north, and I turned around and ran south.
You weren't even going the same direction.
So we both got home before it hit, but it was really coming in, and my folks had gone, the women, my grandmother was there, they'd gone down to the basement. And grandfather and my daddy went down out to the hatchery, which was down low and a half dugout kind of building. Yeah. And grandpa had picked up a wet rag to put over his mouth, you know, to keep the dirt out. And after everything was over, well, then he noticed he'd gotten a cloth that had a rotten egg.
Oh.
And we always tease them about it. But that's how we I remember that. And
that was my Black Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I had, we all wore a lot of leftover clothes at that time. Somebody always handed them down to us. And I remember I had a navy suit that my grandmother McIntosh was a nurse at the Western State home at Helena for orphans. And sometimes, it's a pitiful story, but people would bring their children there. Uh-huh. And they'd always buy them nice new clothes to come to the orphanage. Mm-hmm. And then they took them out of those clothes, and they were in cotton dresses.
Yeah.
And so then sometimes I'd be wearing the orphan kids' clothes.
Yeah. Huh.
But we, at that time, we had to do what we could.
Huh.
And I had this navy suit that somebody had given me. And that was really hard to keep clean during that dusty weather. Oh, let's see. That dirt that you were talking about sifting in. Our son lives in the old homestead house.
Uh-huh.
And he did some remodeling a while back. And the silt from those dust storms was clear up to the sills.
Wow.
Just real dark, fine dirt.
Huh.
Well, I didn't tell you. I think I'm talking too long.
You're fine. We're not out of tape.
You're out of tape?
No, we're not out of tape. Just keep going until it runs out. You want to?
Well, I'll go back here a little bit. You asked about gypsies.
Yes, I was. Gypsies, I put that down to ask again.
And tramps. I remember when there was a gypsy group, and that was before I was... I was just a little kid, but I remember gypsies going through here and camping across from where we lived, not two or three blocks from here. And then the tramps. My grandfather, Mac Barnett, fed every tramp that came through town. And they had their houses marked or something, the people who would...
Yeah, they'd always come back, you know, people come along and heard of that.
And... I don't know, they always put an X out on the house or something. Mm-hmm. They did. And Grandma Barnett, my mother used to tell that Grandma gave away a beautiful rocking chair we'd have now, an antique, to a lady that was coming. They'd come through town in a covered wagon.
Yeah.
And she had a baby, and she didn't have a rocking chair. And Grandma gave her rocking chair. So she fed them all, whether she had any to eat herself, I think.
Were you ever scared of the gypsies? You mentioned that your dad was talking to the hobos and tramps in the backyard.
Well, these were just people that were just walking to try to find the earth. They were down on their luck. And No, folks never ever turned anybody down, but I know we came up, we'd find somebody sitting out there talking to Dad, eating and visiting. But Daddy learned some very exciting things, and he was getting old, and he was in poor health, so it was a blessing to him to have them.
Yeah.
He was traveling with them.
Vicariously, huh? Mm-hmm. Right through them. What about you? Were you guys scared of the gypsies and tramps that came by, or the same sort of thing?
I was probably not just 4 years old.
Yeah.
My daddy built the first radio in Shattuck.
Is that right?
And there weren't radios.
Now he was getting into my husband's business.
Yeah, but that was before your husband was here, wasn't it?
No, I think Romy probably made the first one in the country because he was in school.
I was 4 years old. I remember people would come to our house to hear the radio.
I think WSN or whatever it was from Ohio was the only thing. Chicago and Ohio were the only stations on the air, so you didn't get much of anything but squawks.
Yeah.
Carol mentioned about having a rude awakening coming to a town school. I had a rude awakening when I moved to the farm.
We were reversed it to you.
When I first moved to the farm, when we were first married, and we didn't have water in the house, no bathroom, no electricity.
Oh, no thanks.
But we survived it all.
Uh-huh. And we've been married 55 years. So it works. I can't think what else I can tell you about it.
Well, I do want to ask you one thing that is not on that list of questions. It's been coming up a couple times the past couple interviews. People talking about having bed bugs and what you had to do to get rid of them.
You even got it in new lumber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you get rid of them? What do you do if you have bed bugs?
There was stuff available. I know that, of course, Daddy was building the home, and Mother, whatever it was, but that's more that she knew from her background. And when they moved in Chicago, they had bed bugs, and she knew what to do about it.
Yeah.
But it was in the furniture, and I mean in the walls. And when they plastered, they put whatever this was, blue vitriol or something, and the paint glue, and that killed them. But it was a good idea to find it before they got them built into it. You know, she knew what to look for. So we were pretty fortunate. You think when you're doing a building a new house that you would never have anything like that.
You have to worry about that kind of stuff.
And Uncle August, when he moved into the Schaefer place, there was bed bugs in there. And he took the little jar lids, you know, from the canned stuff, and put coal oil in it and put it under the bed, under the
legs of the bed.
Legs of the bed. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay. I don't remember. Well, I remember being in a motel one time.
It was more or less common, I guess, back then. But we were fortunate that they knew what to do and got rid of them before they ever got to us.
One lady that was talking about bed bugs said that she didn't have them in her house, but she said once you had them, you didn't want to have them again.
That's right. And
I imagine.
We were going to Indiana in the car, and we traveled slowly then because there were no roads, you know. And we'd have to camp places.
Yeah.
And in Illinois, I believe it was, the folks said, well, you can stay in the barn. And there were fleas, and my sister she was one that everything bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she really looked a sight by the time we got
there. Oh, man.
But there was all kind of varmints, and we didn't have insecticides and things, mm-hmm. you know, like we have today.
Huh.
Well, I think I'll close mine out by telling you anything about feed sacks.
Okay.
Did anybody mention that over there with the...
They mentioned that they made tea towels, but they didn't tell me about anything else.
Okay,
so we made everything out of feed sacks. And they were printed. Most of them were printed. And
expansion co-flower.
Uh-huh. And the white ones, of course, had to be
bleached.
We didn't get the letters out of them. And you made tea towels curtains and drapes and dresses. And when I went to college in 37, I had wet and feed sack dresses.
Did that bother you at all, or was it just, hey?
Everybody did it.
Yeah.
Well, after you got to college, we found that that was not the thing. And my mother and grandmother got to work and made me some more suitable clothes.
Yeah.
But anyway, when the women would come in, they'd into the hatchery where we sold the feed, they would say, "Well, she wants this pattern right here." And you'd have to have about 3 sacks to get a dress. And I worked in the hatchery quite a bit, and we'd have to move those sacks over till we got to the right colored sack. And in closing, I want to add a little bit. When I did go to college, well, I needed a job. And so, we had a legislator here, Bert Larson. He was a Democrat, wasn't he? Anyway, by the way, his daughter is Drew Edmondson's wife.
I must have talked to his wife.
Linda is her name.
Mrs. Larson. She lives in Woodward.
That's his mother. That was Bert's wife, Margaret Larson.
I talked to her. She was my very first oral history.
She was a teacher in this little rural school the year before I...
Well, now that whole story goes together, because she was telling about me at that school.
She has quite an article in the county history about that school.
How funny is that?
But anyway, we went to... A. Frank Martin was the... man who placed students for their jobs on the campus. And he said, I remember so plainly, he said he liked to get kids from Western Oklahoma. Because we'd live through the Dust Bowl.
So let me close with that question. How do you think living through the Dust Bowl and the Depression has affected who you are today? What have you brought with you from living then that... shows how in your life now?
Well, I think we're a little more saving and frugal, maybe.
Yeah.
Than we would have been. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I think in my little deal I made the note that if we didn't have the money, we didn't buy it.
Yeah.
So we didn't have things.
What was that quotation? If you wear it out, do... What would you remember?
I don't remember that.
Anyway, wear it out. Do without, or do it. Do without. I can't think what the quote. Have you ever heard that? Make it do without, or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the same philosophy.
So that's.
There was something you were talking about there at the last, and of course I've lost it now. But I would like to. Before the bed bugs, I think.
Or that we were talking about gypsies before that.
Well, gypsies, as far as I was concerned, it was just more or less people talking about it. We didn't run into any gypsies.
You know, I think I remember when there was a Ku Klux Klan here.
Really?
And now I was frightened of that. That was when I was real little, too.
Huh, so when was that?
Listen, if there was any immoral person around.
1924.
Well, the Ku Klux Klan took care of that. You know, that's about all we hear about it.
Huh.
If somebody was pressed to questionable reputation, well, the Ku Klux Klan would probably clear it.
So was the Klan down in the, where did you say, the Sand Hills, where the bootleggers were?
No, this was in town.
They would usually be... more or less, not many of them would be from an organization a little farther away or something. They just did their thing. I don't remember of any of our neighbors ever being a clique from the Klan. Their philosophy might have agreed, but they didn't spread it out.
Yeah.
And we didn't have colored people, honey. That right in through here, the colored people are very few.
Yeah. Shattuck wouldn't let a colored person spend the night.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know
that? I've always heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think it was shot at.
Well, it's, well I know. I think it's revoked now.
No, yeah, we had a few people that were pretty. We had a city council that was pretty bad, and I could name them in for you. And they, you remember Mr. Stevenless, John Stevenless? They pardoned but feathered him.
Huh.
He was a German fellow, and like he was a preacher. And I wouldn't have known that, but they were our next door neighbors.
Huh.
I didn't know that.
Let's see, you learned something that I shouldn't have told them. But they were, might have been a secret. That's why they didn't talk about it, because there was a lot of people that were very upset at these politicians that did that sort of thing. I could name them for you, too.
Huh.
But this hurt my daddy badly, because people being that mean to be
right.
Thought.
Huh.
And John didn't talk about it. He talked to my dad about it. They did.
John Seamless. Mm-hmm. He made a Christian church. Mm-hmm.
He was a Russellite.
Oh, Russell.
But they were good neighbors. His wife was a German woman, and his mother was a German mother. She could talk with mother because she was high German. She had Grandma Wagner. She came a generation behind me, so I've got things
okay.
ahead of her. And then
right.
I remember your grandmother, Barnett. I thought she was the prettiest woman, and she always wore a hat that was beautiful, and generally they were purple. She wore purple.
She was a milliner in Shadow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That would explain all her hats, then.
Katie Peters was a milliner here after Grandma Barnett.
Katie Peters of the Peters family of Shattuck.
Yeah. They had the old Santa Fe hotel down here.
Mr. Peters answered the phone down there when I called down, and he said his great uncle or something.
Actually, he was going to try to come with us today. But his schedule wouldn't allow him to come, because he kind of works in a different... He works in special collections, but he works in sort of a different area of special collections, and so he couldn't come today. But when we come back to Shattuck, he wants to come with us, so...
Yeah. Well, I maybe can get to show him a few things where the Peters was, and Mr. Peters, the last one that lived here, had a place down here in the west part of town. His home is still there, I think.
I don't really remember them.
And Katie married... I can't remember the name. But Romy had a cousin that remembers her because she married the man out there in the Harmon neighborhood. Katie did. It was a longer name, some kind of Bottom or something. And the kid got a kick out of her name. You know. Oh, he'd always ask about it.
My genealogy work, I found somebody that way back there had... the name was Pleasant Bottom.
Oh, no.
I thought that was a funny thing.
Rather unfortunate name for them.
That was another thing that bothered me when we came. Everybody had different names. The German people, their names were different, you know. We had to get used to the Siebenlist and the Shanehals and the Shigodas and all of those were different names. We were just... Apples and Adams and
Smith.
Yeah, and Jones and that out in our neighborhood.
Well, I remember when I was a child that the German ladies when they'd be in town and they'd kind of congregate together and talk German all the time. Mm-hmm. But you know, you don't hear that anymore. Mm-hmm. The young people don't even know how to speak German.
Well, they haven't learned the German language. We didn't have it in school. When the war came along, it changed people's thinkings about that because we were fighting Germany.
Right.
And so that changed things. And mother never had any neighbors out there to talk to. My uncle and mother, but they didn't visit that way. He just told my little sister what this was and what that was and what it meant. But she got a bang out of it. She couldn't do much of anything else. So. Mm-hmm. And then when we came into town, Grandma Stevenless and Grandma Wagner both spoke. Theirs was more botched up ones with Russia. It wasn't. I think Grandma Stevenless was more straight, high German, I think they call it. but it was very different. But now you spoke about genealogies. I was very interested in that, whether it was Bible genealogy or whether it was a neighborhood or what.
Yeah.
And when I reminisce now, I think about the Adams family. The oldest one was Gladys, and then there was Ruth, and then there was Iva, and there was the boys. There was several of those,
yeah.
And one more girl. And I could remember all the names, but I'll tell you, the Alzheimer takes that away.
Yeah.
And I'll be thinking of those things, and then I want to ask Evelyn, and by the time I see Evelyn that day, will I have forgotten who I want to ask her about. But that's the way you talk about the Whites, and I remember their families, Charlie White's. And Mrs. White, Manon, you know, she was a school teacher. You said Charlie's wife, Manon.
Oh, Manon. Mm-hmm.
She was a school teacher.
That's when it carried me through my first year.
In your new world at the country school.
So some of those that she came along afterwards, well, I remembered from way back when my folks